From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 20th day of September 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. He's in New Market, Indiana. The state statisticians from Illinois, Minnesota, Nebraska, and Indiana will be along to update conditions across their areas. And we'll hear from Eric Erickson. He's with the U.S. Grains Council and will talk to us about China, the export market for U.S. corn, and how that has changed in the last 12 months. And it all happens right here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is, of course, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
In Chicago, on this Tuesday afternoon, futures finished the day mixed. The December soft red winter wheat at $6.74¾, up a penny and a three-quarters for the day. In July at $7.40, up three-quarters of a cent. December corn futures were down two at $6.90¼. The March at $7.03, down two. The May at $7.10½, 2½ lower. July corn, $7.14¼, down 2 cents. And December of next year at $6.19¾, again, up 2 cents for the day. November beans at $13.38, up two. January, $13.48¾ a bushel, 2 cents higher there. March contract, $13.56¼, up 2¼. And the May beans, $13.61½, up 2¾. July, $13.69, up 2¼. November beans of next year, $13.24¾ a bushel, up 2¾ cents. October bean meal futures at $3.48.50, $1.40 higher. October bean oil futures at $55.31, down 22 cents. Live cattle futures, October contract $118.70, $1.75 higher for the day. December futures at $119.20 were up $1.25. September feeder cattle on the afternoon at $134.35, down 15, and the October's at $137.52½, up $1.17½, and the October lean hogs today. $89.25. A settlement price per 100 pounds, up $1.37½. December futures, $82.97½, $1.15 higher. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. You can always visit us online at willag.org or online on your smartphone at m.willag.org. Here's what the outside markets look like. At this hour, October crude oil futures, $86.89 a barrel, $1.19 higher. Ethanol at $2.65¼, a penny and 3 cents higher, and October natural gas at $3.79¼, down 0.3 cents. Heating oil or diesel fuel, a penny and 0.8 cents higher, at $2.96¾, and the gold futures on the afternoon at $1,806.60, up $30.20. The Dow now at 11,510, just about 110 points higher. The dollar at 77 even, down 0.1, and the CRB index at 324.85, up 1.27. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service on this Tuesday afternoon. They say mostly sunny skies, a high near 78 degrees for the day. South winds at about 7 miles an hour tonight, partly cloudy. A low of 56 degrees. Southwest winds again around 8 miles an hour this evening. Wednesday, partly sunny skies, a high near 74. West winds between 6 and 13, gusting to 18. And Wednesday night, partly cloudy skies, a low of 48 degrees. West winds at 5 to 8. Thursday, mostly sunny skies, the high near 65. West northwest winds at 5 to 8. And Thursday night, partly cloudy, a low of 45 degrees. On Friday, partly sunny skies, a high of 66. Friday night, partly cloudy, a low of 44. Saturday, mostly sunny, a high near 67 degrees for the weekend. And Saturday night, partly cloudy, a low of 46. On Sunday, mostly sunny skies, the high near 69 degrees. Sunday night, partly cloudy, a low of 49. And on Monday, as we begin the next work week, mostly sunny, a high near 72 degrees.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This is the closing market report from the University of Illinois. On the phone line with us is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana, to take up the agricultural futures markets. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Boy, good afternoon, Todd.
What did you find on the squawk box and online today about the trade in Chicago?
Well, we started off after a higher overnight. We looked at the decreased crop ratings, which we thought reflected the frost or freeze damage that they were skeptical about or didn't seem to absorb into last week's trading. Then the dollar was a little lower to start with, and then there was the rumors of Chinese interest in corn and the idea that being they were going to auction off some of their corn to squelch some of the tightness right before their harvest starts had us pretty enthused this morning. But then we got the news that their tenders included the idea that that Syngenta gene that hadn't been approved in China yet was a no-tolerance clause in what they were talking about. So most of our exporters walked away from the business.
That one is a non-starter. We'll hear a bit about Viptera a bit later when we talk to the U.S. Grains Council. And then I've got a little bit from Farm Progress Show that I recorded with the Syngenta folks. We'll try to use that tomorrow on Viptera and AgriSure and talk to them just a bit about what that means and with China in as an importer of corn at this point over the next year probably. It was an awfully weak close, at least it looked like it was. Was that your perspective as well?
You know, we looked at things we'd like to see in a close over the 92 over yesterday's close that way to have a little stronger close. You know, in some of the charts we do look in the D's corn, the support is 687, so we did still close above that, but it sure didn't give us the feeling of wanting to surge back up and close above the $7 with what we're seeing right now. The getting mixed feelings out there as we talk to elevators and different people and farmers around the Midwest here, we're feeling that maybe the corn and bean crop is a little bit better. But some of the national news wires are saying that they think that the yields will go down as things go along here, and they're hearing poor yields. So we're not sure which ones to believe. We know we maybe just don't have a big enough sampling yet to tell you for sure.
Of course, the WASI numbers are projecting more beans on hand than had been expected, a bigger bean crop, in fact. Beans, though, managed to gain a couple of cents in nearby contracts today.
You know, China has been very aggressive at pricing some beans. They have been doing most of their purchasing out of South America. But as long as they're active and their crush margins turn positive, it means that someday they'll be coming here for some beans, too.
Anything else to add before I let you go?
Yeah, beautiful day here. Be aware when you're harvesting and keep away from having any accidents.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Wayne Nelson. He's with L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report each and every Tuesday afternoon. Just a reminder that over the next several days, we may disappear. In fact, at this point, it looks like it'll be Thursday when they start to retrench the guy wires on our twin towers for WILL AM 580. That's the home radio station for this program. Once that happens, you can always turn to one of our affiliate stations or listen to us online at willag.org or use our smartphone app at m.willag.org. At this point, it looks like we will power down on Thursday of this week. Now, up next, we'll hear from the state statisticians in Illinois and Minnesota, Nebraska, and Indiana about their region and how the crop is progressing.
This is Brad Schwab, Chief Crop Statistician with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Illinois Field Office. Dry conditions existed across the northern half of the state, while above normal precipitation fell in the southern half for the 7-day period ending September 18th. Overall, the state averaged 65 one-hundredths of an inch, 21 one-hundredths below normal. Temperatures were also below normal, averaging a statewide 61 degrees. The average temperature normally for this period calculates to just under 67 degrees. Statewide, corn in the mature stage advanced to 63% compared to 88% last year and 55% for the 5-year average. 11% of the corn crop was reported harvested compared with 35% last year and 15% for the 5-year average. The crop reporting district leading the state in corn harvest activity was the Southwestern District, where 32% had been harvested. Overall, the corn crop was rated in 41% good or excellent condition, up 1 percentage point from the previous week. Soybeans in the turning yellow category were reported at 69%, compared to 85% a year ago and 69% for the five-year average. 31% of the crop was reported shedding leaves, compared to 62% a year ago and 39% for the five-year average. 1% of the crop was reported harvested, compared with 9% 1 year ago and 4% for the five-year average. Overall, the soybean crop was rated in 47% good or excellent condition, up 3 percentage points from last week. The crop reporting district leading the state in soybean maturity was the Northeast District, where 44% was reported shedding leaves. This has been Brad Schwab with the Illinois Field Office of the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is David Biar of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service with a crop weather report for the week ending September 18, 2011. Cool and misty weather slowed field work, but provided some much-needed moisture for germination of fall-seeded wheat. 41% of the wheat crop has been seeded. Corn conditions rated 74% good to excellent, near 75 average. Corn in the dent stage was 97% ahead of 95 average. Harvest of corn silage, high-moisture corn, and seed corn continued. Soybean conditions rated 79% good to excellent above 74 average. Soybean fields turning color stood at 73% behind 82 average. Soybeans dropping leaves was at 17% behind 35 average. This is David Biar of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Nebraska Field Office in Lincoln.
This is Dan Loftus, Deputy Director for the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, with the weekly crop weather report for the week ending September 18, 2011. Overnight temperatures on September 15th fell into the low 30s to mid-20s, setting record lows in several Minnesota communities. Reporters noted the freezing temperatures ended the growing season in portions of the state, but also indicated the impact on row crops was unclear. Corn and soybean condition ratings declined during the week. Statewide, 46% of corn was rated in good condition, with 10% rated excellent. 43% of soybeans were in good condition, with 8% rated excellent. 92% of corn was in the dent stage, 9 points higher than a week ago and 1 point ahead of average. 28% of corn was rated mature, compared to 46% last year and 37% average. 41% of soybeans were dropping leaves, up 32 points from last week, but 23 points behind last year and 18 points behind average. 7% of soybeans were rated mature, compared to 22% last year and 23% average. Topsoil moisture supplies declined. 51% of the state's topsoil was rated adequate, with 34% short and 14% very short. A majority of reporting stations ranged from 1 to 3 inches below normal for precipitation over the last 4 weeks. For the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, this is Dan Loftus.
Hello, this is Greg Preston, Director of the USDA NAS Field Office for Indiana. Waiting for grain moisture levels to dry down, slowed harvest activity for corn and soybeans. Farmers continued preparation of harvest equipment and grain storage facilities as the start of the harvest begins. Cooler temperatures and fall-like conditions brought improvement to pastures and lowered livestock stress. 85% of the corn crop is in the dent stage, compared to 99% for last year and 88% for the five-year average. 36% of the corn crop is mature, compared to 85% for last year and 47% for the five-year average. 4% of the corn crop has been harvested, compared to 25% for last year and 9% for the five-year average. Corn condition for the week was rated at 34% good to excellent, compared to 56% last year at this time. 39% of the soybean acreage is shedding leaves, compared to 76% for last year and 53% for the five-year average. 1% of the soybean acreage has been harvested, compared to 18% for last year and 5% for the five-year average. Soybean condition for the week was rated at 41% good to excellent, compared to 51% last year at this time. This is Greg Preston reporting from the NAS Indiana Field Office.
Our thanks go to the state statisticians for their weekly updates of crop progress across the Corn Belt.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Tuesday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. We're joined by Eric Erickson of the U.S. Grains Council to talk about corn exports. Eric, thank you for taking the time with us today. In one of your latest research articles that's posted on the U.S. Grains Council website at grains.org, you take a look back at the latest WASDE numbers and pull out some interesting figures. I'd like to deal with exports in particular. And one of the slides that shows who the competitors in the United States might be and how you're expecting from the U.S. Grains Council for them to change their export markets over the coming years. Can you go through that slide for me, please?
Yes, well, I have two slides. One shows kind of a 10-year history of our competitors, and another one shows a one-year snapshot of a couple of the major ones. Do you want to start with the 10-year picture?
Yes, please.
This is an interesting look back, because back in the early years of the 2000s, of course, China was our biggest competitor, and we were very concerned about that competition, particularly in Asia. And China has basically exited the export market. They're now importing a couple of million tons a year, and we think it's going to be significantly larger in coming years. So what we have now is we see that Argentina, our biggest competitor in the corn market, has had a pretty steady and increasing amount of exports, that Brazil has grown fairly substantially over the last decade, and that Ukraine has emerged in the last 5 years, really, as our number three competitor. In addition, there are there's half a dozen other smaller countries that, particularly when we see these high corn prices, are able to produce and export corn. India, for one. Some of the others are kind of unexpected. Paraguay, Serbia. So it just goes to show that high prices can really bring out the production and the export capacities of other countries.
When you look at Ukraine, which really didn't export very much at all, and they have ramped up their export market, I'm wondering, are you concerned about where that grain is exported to?
Well, absolutely, because we've looked at that. Ukraine primarily exports to markets that are very close by in the neighborhood, Eastern Europe, Black Sea, Eastern Mediterranean. And, you know, the challenge we face is that the Ukraine has excellent corn production capabilities. They have plenty of land. They have good weather. They have the capacity to continue to increase their corn production as they are also ramping up their wheat production. So there's no reason to expect that they're going to go away. One of the issues for Ukraine, of course, is that their own domestic meat, milk, and egg consumption is pretty low. And so we would hope that as incomes continue to grow and as they get their act together on a domestic front, that some of their production will be diverted into taking care of their own consumers, and that will help us in terms of our ability to continue to sell into the Eastern Mediterranean.
Are you concerned at all that their export market will grow by proximity, for instance, to trading partners that have long been in the United States realm? So if they're into Eastern Europe, they might go to Europe, they may look to Japan because they're closer. And now that China is actually an importing country, that China might find it easier to import from Ukraine than the United States?
Well, we haven't seen that. And I don't think that at this point the Asian markets are particularly at risk in terms of Ukrainian exports. But big markets in the Middle East and North Africa, particularly in the Eastern Mediterranean, Egypt has seen an erosion of U.S. share there because of Ukrainian exports. Some of the countries in the Middle East, Saudi Arabia and Jordan, these are the places where, and Turkey, these are the places where we've seen Ukrainian exports pick up.
I suppose the U.S. Grains Council is concerned because ethanol has leveled off and the mandate will not allow more corn-based ethanol into the system, or very much more, that the export market really might be the place that needs to be the growth area for U.S. corn.
Well, very much we believe that exports have a great potential future for U.S. corn farmers. And as you said, while our production is going to continue to climb, our yields are going to continue to grow, The domestic demand for corn-based ethanol, you know, likely will plateau here within the next couple of years. Certainly, the heroic growth stage is past, and it's going to be important that we have healthy export markets.
What's the one-year snapshot look like, and what story does it tell?
Well, we of course had the last USDA WASDE report was reflected disappointing yields this year, and we all know the reasons for all those things. Even though production in 2011 is projected to be a little higher than it was in 2010, we were hoping it was going to be a lot higher. And so we're not going to have the abundant supplies for exports that we had hoped for. And you can see in that little chart there that U.S. exports are actually expected to decline somewhat, while Argentina and Brazil and Ukraine have expanded their corn production and are expected to take market share, at least in the coming year, that the U.S. is giving up. And interestingly, the world corn supply and demand situation is actually pretty healthy, in spite of the fact that the United States has had a disappointing year. It looks like the world corn production is headed for a new record. Feed consumption continues to grow. Total consumption continues to grow. And we see that our competitors have continued to expand their own production. Argentina, Brazil, and Ukraine combined will be increasing their corn production this year over last year by 15 million tons. And so we're seeing, again, high prices enable lots of countries to increase their production and increase their ability to export. So it's going to be, so we see growing demand, and that demand is going to continue to grow rapidly, but also growing competition. The U.S. has to have on its game face, and we have to be competing.
And one final question as it relates to exports. Syngenta's Viptera or AgriSure products are not licensed into China. How much of an issue do you think that might be as the U.S. Grains Council assesses what it means to the marketplace?
Well, China's a tough one because they appeared suddenly, and they appeared, as a big buyer. And so the industry really had established its processes for its pattern for introducing new biotech events, and China has kind of disrupted that pattern. They got to figure out a new way to deal with China. So this year it's Syngenta's turn. Next year, you know, there are going to be other companies that are facing the same problem. How can we introduce a new variety if China's buying 2 million, 3 million, 5 million tons of corn? They become a big player, but their biotech approval process is slow. It's not something they're willing to synchronize with ours. And so there's a lot of discussions going on within the U.S. industry and between the U.S. industry and the government of China about how to perhaps come up with a long-term solution whereby the Chinese government comes up with an improved, more streamlined approval process so that they can meet their own needs for imports, and at the same time our producers and traders can be confident that they're not going to be they're not going to face some restrictions because of biotech events.
Mr. Erickson, thank you so much for taking the time with us today.
It's my pleasure.
Eric Erickson is with the U.S. Grains Council. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report. We'll say so long to some of our radio stations now. For the rest of you, I'll be back in just 2 minutes with the agricultural weather forecast.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
It's National Rum Punch Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1819, Seth Boynton was issued the first patent for manufacture of patent leather in the U.S. Boynton is also remembered for a host of other inventions, including a nail-making machine and a hybrid strawberry. In 1842, Sir James Dewar was born. A British chemist and physicist, he invented the Dewar flask, the original thermos bottle. His design incorporated a double-walled flask. He created a vacuum between two silvered layers of steel or glass. In 1859, George B. Simpson patented the electric range. He called his invention an electroheater. In 1878, Uptown Sinclair was born. His novel, The Jungle, was a detailed horror story about the conditions in the meatpacking industry of the time in Chicago. It led to extensive reforms. In 1888, David Marin was born, an American pathologist. His research on the treatment of goiters with iodine led to the iodizing of table salt. And in 1960, Ernest Goodpasture died, a research scientist. He used chick embryos in designing the first practical method for developing uncontaminated viruses, which made possible the mass production of vaccines for diseases such as smallpox and influenza. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Listening to the closing market report, it is a Tuesday afternoon. Don Day of Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming is not available this afternoon to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. We do have the cast from the National Weather Service. It says skies in the Urbana-Champaign area today will be mostly sunny with a high near 78 degrees. Tonight, partly cloudy and a low of 56. Wednesday will have sunny skies and 74. And Wednesday night, partly cloudy and 48 degrees. On Thursday, for the rest of the work week here, mostly sunny, a high near 65 degrees, beautiful harvest weather. Thursday night, partly cloudy, a low of 45, and Friday, partly sunny, and we'll have a high on Friday near 66 degrees. Friday night, a low of 44 and partly cloudy, 67 on Saturday and sunny. Saturday night, partly cloudy and a low of 46 degrees, and on Sunday, mostly sunny skies, a high near 69. Sunday night, partly cloudy, a low of 49. And on Monday, mostly sunny with a high near 72 degrees. Now up next, you know the students here at the University of Illinois have entered a Department of Energy Solar House competition. I'll have more details. 21 months ago, Michael Hines was a University of Illinois student. It was then that he started to work on a solar-powered home for a U.S. Department of Energy competition called the Solar Decathlon. The DOE challenges collegiate teams to design, build, and operate solar-powered houses that are cost-effective, energy-efficient, and attractive. The Illinois house is called the Rehome, says former student and now architect Michael Hines.
So we're focusing on rehousing after Midwestern disasters, so tornadoes, fires, and floods. And so the Rehome actually goes with our whole marketing of kind of responding to disasters, reconnecting with communities, renewable energies, and a variety of different other aspects.
The design of the Rehome, the whole project from beginning to end, is an extraordinary learning experience and one Hines just couldn't leave after graduating from the University of Illinois. The project, like going to school, he says, is a path to complete, and one that shifts over time. His vision of the Solar Decathlon Rehome changed as it was adjusted to reality.
You depart quite a few ways. You look at what's realistic. You look at what's actually going to work compared to what was drawn on the paper. But we actually did a pretty good job when we put the construction documents in of not having to change too much. Little tweaks, but I think that happens in every construction process.
In this process, Hines is most proud of the integration of the solar panels along the front canopy of the Rehome. He says it will allow the public to get up close and see the panels in a more personal way. Besides, they're used not only to collect energy, but to shade the house. Hines had to help tear apart his creation so that it could be shipped and reassembled on the National Mall in Washington, D.C. for the public to walk through beginning September the 23rd. The house and all the others in the Solar Decathlon should, while they are on display, produce more energy than they consume.
Yes. So for that 10-day period that we're in Washington and throughout the entire year, if you were to put this in actual application, you are going to produce more energy than you consume on a daily basis.
That makes the Rehome an investment of sorts, something like the University of Illinois education Hines just completed. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
And that wraps up this edition of the Closing Market Report. Thanks for being with us. Stay safe out there on the combines, and have a great afternoon.